For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome to Orioles on the Verge. This is Zach Spedden, joined as always by Bob Phelan and Nick Stevens. And on tonight's episode, we're going to take a dive into the starts of the season for a few Orioles players. Some of them good, some of them bad. And we're going to talk about whether or not they're sustainable. And just to give an example, we're going to go through some guys who are off to surprisingly hot starts at their minor league level and some guys who are off to cold starts and try to figure out what's going to happen from here. And I will just dive right in with my choice for this segment, which is Judd Fabian. Fabian is coming off a very good week at Bowie, and this continues a trend that we have seen so far this year. You may recall Fabian last year got off to a strong start at Aberdeen and then earned a promotion to Bowie. When he got to Bowie, some of the concerns about him being a three true outcomes hitter were on full display. He would typically hit a home run, strikeout, or walk. He ultimately struck out in 37.5% of his 288 plate appearances with the Bay Sox last year while belting 15 home runs and walking about 15% of the time. This year, through 12 games and 52 plate appearances, the strikeout rate has plummeted, still a little high at 26.9%, but nonetheless a big step forward from last year. And he's got a 172 WRC plus, two homers, and a walk rate of 13.5%. So, Judd Fabian, being a more complete hitter, is this sustainable? If it is, could it sustain itself within a promotion to AAA, or do you expect some of his bad tendencies to show up again? And with that, I'll turn it over to Bob.
Yeah, I do. I tend to think that it will probably show itself back up if and when he gets promoted to AAA until he can adjust to that level. But it's still a fantastic sign. Strikeout rate tends to stabilize around 60 plate appearances. He's at 52. So if he's striking out around 26, 27% of the time, that's amazing for Judd Fabian because he's got stupid power, great patience and eye at the plate, draws a ton of walks. If he can just, like we've said before, if he can hit 240, 250 with his other skills, then he's a major leaguer, no doubt about it. So, I'm very optimistic following his start to the season. And anytime you hit a walk-off grand slam, I mean, you can't do much better than that.
And we just talked about Colton Cowser and what he's doing with a 30% strikeout rate in the big leagues. Fabian is better defensively, plays a premium center field defense. So if he can do all of that while also showcasing that kind of power with a 30%, you know, whatever strikeout rate in the big leagues down the road, I think that will play. I think Fabian taking this step forward, if this does remain consistent, which I hope it is, because, and I think it can be, because he made a lot of big adjustments and improvements when he was in Aberdeen, and we just didn't see that when he got promoted to Bowie. So new level, he was adjusting. Now he's adjusted, he's better prepared, and he showcased those improvements. We're now seeing them play out at the AA level. And I think if he can do that and it's sustainable, then it is a pretty big deal, in my opinion, because I'm not saying he's going to be major league ready this year. He may not be pounding down the door to the majors until, you know, mid to late 2025 if everything continues to go like this. But like, to have that guy who is a no doubt center fielder step up and emerge, I think is huge, because it's not going to be Hudson Haskin. Dylan Beavers is a corner guy. Trying to think of cycle through the names here. It's not going to be Dante Williams. He's not going to hit. Like, I know a lot of people want to say, like, Enrique Bradfield Jr., he's there. He's that natural maybe successor to Cedric Mullins in a couple of years. But, like, this is his first year in pro ball. He's in high A. There are a lot of questions about that bat still. So, yes, he can change the game defensively and on the base paths. But Fabian also plays elite defense, has good speed as well, has insane power. Enrique Bradfield has virtually no power. So for Fabian to take that step forward this year, I think that would be pretty massive. And I tweeted this out yesterday, I really like this, that, and it's actually gone down a little bit more. With the three true outcome stuff, 52% of his at-bats last year in Double-A were either a home run or a strikeout. That's now down to 36%. So he is definitely a much more well-rounded hitter so far this year.
And hey, he's a right-handed bat. So in the last episode, we talked about, are we too lefty heavy? Not if Judd Fabian continues his development.
This is going to sustain itself at Double-A. I think that this is a new normal for him. As Nick said, he made adjustments at Aberdeen last year that allowed him to be successful. I think it's taken a little bit of time for him to catch up at Double-A. But this is closer to the type of player that Judd Fabian can be. Now, I will say this, which is that Fabian, given how aggressively the Orioles move some of their prospects leading up to AAA, and the fact that, you know, he came from Florida, college pick, he's 23, he'll be 24 in September, that kind of looks like a guy that you would want to move quickly if you can. But I wouldn't mind seeing the Orioles slow play this one a little bit. I don't like to use that term, but in this case, I wouldn't mind them maybe holding out until July, just to make sure that when Fabian gets to AAA, he can hit the ground running and do not have as much of a drop-off as he had last year. I would expect a little bit of a downtick because adjusting to those breaking balls at a higher level is a challenge for any hitter. But I think that you can find a way, hopefully, where that drop-off is not as stark as it was last year, and he's able to have something close to this kind of production throughout the season.
It'd be interesting if they do hold him down, because it looks like Peyton Burdick getting DFA'd earlier. We'll see if he clears waivers, although he probably won't. Kerstad up in AAA, does he take, or Kerstad up in the pros now, does he take that job? It's like, if Fabian's going to hit this well, do they go ahead and move him up to AAA sooner rather than later? Because, I mean, someone is going to have to play AAA, play the outfield in AAA. But do they say, they feel like, yeah, we do think this is sustainable as well, and they go ahead and make that move? Be interesting to see where Fabian's playing in 2 weeks.
Yeah, I mean, Haskins should be back with Norfolk next week, I assume. Billy Cook could easily go back up. But, yeah, if you're reading and watching a lot, reading the box scores and watching a lot of Norfolk Tides, like we are, you know, outside of the top five when the season started, top four as of tonight, top three starting tomorrow, it's pretty ugly. So yeah, Norfolk could use him at some point pretty soon. I'm sure of that.
We're going to stick to this theme and go with Bob, because he's got a player at Aberdeen that's kind of performing in a similar trend right now.
Yeah, something about Creed Willems where he struggles mightily and just he's just digesting it all season long. Off season hits, boom. Oh, I mastered it. I figured it out. Last season, after hitting, all right, let's do this properly. After hitting 190 with a 65 WRC plus as a 19-year-old in low A with a 5.7% walk rate, 27.6% strikeout rate. He comes back last year and just crushes to a 192 WRC plus. That's 302 with an OPS over 1,000. Walks 16.7%, so 11 percentage points higher. Strikes out 3% less. ISO spikes. And it's like, oh, all of a sudden Creed Willems is this legit prospect, and he still is. Gets promoted, 20 years old in high A. And he kind of stinks up the joint. Bats 192 with the 60 WRC plus. Again, OPS under 600 for the Ironbirds. Walk rate goes back down to 8.4. Strikeout rate goes back up to 27.7%. ISO dips again. Well, he's back in Aberdeen this year. He's still 20, will turn 21 in early June. And he's batting 326 with a 213 WRC plus. OPS over 1,100. Striking out less than 20% of the time. Walk rate's only 6.5% right now, but it almost seems like an organizational philosophy at this point that the walk rates have dipped and impact has gone up. But yeah, he's just off to a fantastic start once again. Maybe this year he can, and it's a when, not if, when he gets promoted to Double-A at some point middle of the season. Hopefully this time he can continue to perform when he gets promoted. But he's a legit prospect, still only 20 years old. The Orioles are loaded with catchers. It's kind of absurd. Creed Willems just adding his name to the list, trying to move up the prospect ranks.
He's going to get promoted to Bowie, and a month and a half or so, and he's going to suck the rest of the year. He's not going to hit when he gets to Bowie because he's got to continue this trend. And if he does, it's going to be the most hilarious thing ever. I cannot wait for it, actually. Sorry, Greed. Like, you're going to learn. You're going to develop. But I hope the numbers aren't good when you get to Bowie. And then next year, 2025, he rakes again to start Bowie. And there will be many articles that I will enjoy reading about Creed Willems. I am becoming more of a believer. I will say that to perform like he has in high A. And one of the bigger things that sticks out to me is the strikeout rate, to be honest. Like, he's always been, you rattled off the numbers there, he's always been a mid-20s to upper 20% strikeout rate guy. And now he's below 20% right now as we're recording this. So I like it. The home run power is there. He's hitting for average. He's not striking out nearly as much as he has been throughout his career. The 213 WRC plus is not sustainable, obviously, but he is the defense, what I was thinking about. There are other defensive catchers in this organization who I think I'm going to mention one later on, maybe in the mailbag episode, that could factor into the major league plans at some point for this team. But if Creed's bat is going to perform like this, his defense could even take a step back, I think. And this is like a first base DH type guy. I think he could survive in the major leagues if he's going to continue to trend like this. But still a long way to go there. But I think for right now, yeah, this shout out to Creed Willems for this start. And he's racking up the doubles. I think he has, what, four in his last, what, two games or something? He's on a tear. And I don't see him slowing down, at least right now when he's in Aberdeen.
His ISO right now is 442. That's higher than Matt Horvath's OPS.
Yeah, Willems is off to a really good start. I do think he's gonna, you know, ultimately put up really good numbers at Aberdeen, even if the WRC plus isn't sustainable, which it isn't. The thing I do find interesting is that his walk rate is down almost 2%, but his strikeout rate has dropped so much, as Bob said, that you kind of live with that. Here, I want to throw out this question though before we move on to Nick's selections. How do you actually fit Willems into Bowie? Because you have Silas Ardway there. Samuel Basayo has yet to catch, but we know that when he recovers from the elbow issue, that the Orioles are going to want to put him behind the plate. Then you have Connor Pavlone, who has not hit well in his career, but I think a lot of people in this organization like because of his defense and his ability to work with the pitching staff. And T.T. Bowens, a guy who I'm going to talk about in a little bit, hitting the ball pretty well for the Bay Sox right now at first base. So where would Willems actually fit in? I know that they will make room for him. I don't doubt that. But how do you do it? Because there's a lot of first base catcher types with the Bay Sox right now.
First, if you're going to be overloaded to one position, catcher's the one to do it. Hey, an extra day of rest for everybody. Can rotate between first base, DH, and catcher. That's fine. T.T. Bowens, he's off to a great start. I could see him easily being in Norfolk by the time Creed moves up. So clears up a little bit of space in Billy Cook as well. It is tough, but I think they'll be able to figure it out. Maybe you can play, maybe Silas Ardoin at some point gets up to AAA Norfolk too. I feel like he's really developing nicely as well. Maverick Hanley, Silas Ardoin, tandem at catcher at AAA would be nice. Homegrown catching talent, defensive capabilities there.
Yeah, I was going to say, Silas is going to be learning the streets of Norfolk here pretty soon. By the time Creed is ready to come up, I could see them moving Ardway up to AAA. And we'll see. I imagine David Banuelos is DFA'd a second time by the time this episode gets put out on the main feed. But I imagine he gets DFA'd Tuesday to Kershad already. Well, I don't know. Kerstad's on the 40-man roster, so I don't know if he has to be. He doesn't have to be DFA'd, right? Either way, I imagine he gets DFA'd again at some point. We'll see if he clears waivers a second time, but I don't know how long he's for the organization. Michael Perez then probably steps into that taxi squad catcher role, and then you got, yeah, Maverick Hanley and Silas Ardway catching in AAA in 2 months, and then Creed comes up, and that's how you get your playing time.
I should say real quick, in fairness to Pavlone, he is actually off to a decent start to plate this year, even though his career numbers at the plate have not been very good. With that, I'm going to go over to Nick now, because Nick has two picks And we've talked about two guys getting off to hot starts. So just to mix things up a little bit, going to have Nick start out with the guy who's on his list who's off to a cold start.
It's Matt Horvath. Not good start to the year. Started out 0 for 4 with two strikeouts on opening night. Not great. He did hit a double on night two and then singled on night three and then did not have another hit over his next five games. The average was down to a very not nice 0.69 going into, was that Thursday's game? I'm looking at his game log here and can't do math with dates and stuff. So, but fact, the point is, over the last three games, he has four hits, two of them are doubles, one a home run, which went the opposite way, five RBIs, three walks, and just one strikeout. So he has 50 plate appearances into the season, and he's sporting a 20% walk rate with an 18% strikeout rate. I love those numbers. So even though he was off to the slow start, he wasn't pressing. He remained patient, kept walking, kept getting on base. I think watching him this weekend, I saw the Horvath that I came to love when I was watching him at UNC. He was a guy who went undrafted multiple times. He was a guy who I think scouts coming into this year's draft, I think scouts were very mixed on him. And it seemed like it was the hit tool. Like a lot of people had questions, was he going to be able to hit enough? Even when he had this little breakout his last year at UNC, the question was he going to be able to hit enough at the next level to take a flyer on him? But then there was even the article over at Baseball America this offseason about how Matt Horvath, I think it was titled something like Matt Horvath was the perfect draft pick for the Baltimore Orioles. He fits perfectly into this system. And he had quotes in there about how his adjustment to the Orioles training programs, how much he loved it and how much it was helping him. And I think we're going to start to see those adjustments as the year plays out. So I don't think that 0.69 average that he was at a couple days ago, the low OPS, the low WRC plus, I don't think that sticks with Horvath. I do think he ends up performing well. We see this all the time with guys. It's his first full year in the big leagues or in pro ball. He's at high A where a lot of these guys tend to struggle. He's made some adjustments. I think he's a project pick, especially with that swing. So he's learning to play with those adjustments. The speed, power, defense, they all play. He's played a lot of third base in Aberdeen and he's played it well. That's impressed me. I think the Orioles can improve that hit tool, and I think he skyrockets by the end of the year. And he is that Matt Horvath that so many people were hyping up this offseason, and I think we started feeling that love a lot as well and hyping up Horvath as a guy who could really skyrocket up a top 30 list this year.
Yeah, I could not be less worried about Matt Horvath. If you put a gun to my head, that's a weird analogy. He's got 20% walk rate. He's only striking out 18% of the time. His BABIP is 167. That's unsustainably low. And still, his WRC plus is still 92, despite being only 620, batting 150. That just says it all. It's been 50 plate appearances. Talk to me in another 50 or so, and I think we'll be fine. It's all going to even out in the long run, and he'll be another guy that, just based on this cold start alone, when he gets promoted inevitably to Bowie midway through the year, it'll be like, oh, really? Horvath promoted with these kind of numbers? And then, boom, he goes off at Bowie, kind of like Kowser Norby did a couple years ago. So, yeah, I'm still a huge fan of Horvath. He is, spoiler alert for our next top 50 update, on my personal rankings, he has not taken a hit. But, yeah, cold start, it happens.
Yeah, he won't be taking much of a hit on mine either. And there's, you know, you both touched on it. There's always a player or two who gets off to a slower than expected start at Aberdeen. And then their numbers, you know, a couple months into the season are kind of middling. Then they go to Bowie and they hit the cover off the ball. I could see Horvath being that guy this year. As Bob mentioned, he's having bad luck on balls put in play right now. He could afford to hit the ball on the ground a little bit less, but that's going to come with time. The weekend that he had in Hudson Valley, I think, is a good sign of a possible breakout here in the next couple of weeks. So, yeah, I'm not worried about him.
Well, let's go to a guy who maybe there is some concern. I don't think there is. Let's talk about Freddie Benkazme. I put his name on the rundown just because I don't remember if we talked about him or not last week or recently. Like, I don't know. The dailies, the Patreon shows, the main shows, it's all running together for me now at this point. But we also talked a lot about pitching last week. I wrote the article It's up on our Substack now. Go check it out. 8 pitchers that are impressing me. So there's a lot of talk about pitchers. So I figured let's just hit hitting. And like, we've been big fans of Ben Cosme since back in the day, the good old days, when he was posting the bunting hype videos on Instagram when he was in the DSL. The kid just drips confidence, played in 2 games in the FCO, gets promoted to Delmarva, where he had a 138 WRC plus in Delmarva. The Orioles social media team really does push his content fairly hard. I think the organization clearly loves him. We've talked to people high up in this organization who I think their tone changes when they talk about Freddie in a positive way as well.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
He got to high A last year. It wasn't great. 88 WRC plus, still no real home defensively. I was still had high hopes for Ben Cosme to break out of this funk in double A, but I did not imagine that we would see a Ben Cosme who 2.5 weeks through the year has a WRC plus of 185. He's hitting home runs at 100 plus miles per hour. He very rarely struck out already, and he's posting a career low 10% strikeout rate. I think he's arguably, you guys tell me if you agree or not, the most improved player defensively in this system right now. Because I hate it when people want to bring up talk about prospects who I know they haven't watched and talk about how many errors they've committed. I don't care about the error statistic. It is subjective. Even Bowie's home score isn't helping out Freddie with the error thing, because I can tell you at least 3. The other 3, I don't know. I have to go back and look. But I can tell you 3 of those 6 errors, he has been charged with 6 errors. 3 of those errors, he should not, those are not errors. Anthony Servideo had no business going after a ball, and he just ran into Ben Cosme. Like, stay over at third base. Either way, the error got charged to Bowie. There was a rocket that Ben Cosme just didn't get to, but got charged with the error. And there was another one where he took a bad hop on him. So I had 3 distinct plays that he was charged with an error and should not have been. I think he's the most improved defensive player in the system. He's fun. He's 21 years old at double A. Again, he's young at the level. That means a lot.
Superstar shortstop prospect. Orioles needed another one since they traded Joey Ortiz, and looks like they might have got one. Yeah, I agree defensively. Talked about it a lot last year, how much I thought he improved. He looks even better out there this year. Just super smooth. Just knows what he's doing, knows where to be. Yeah, he is super fun to watch on defense and just super fun to watch in general. Yeah, already didn't strike out barely at all. And like I said, strikeout rate stabilizes around 60 plate appearances. He's only 4 away, only striking out a little over 10% of the time. And I think on the Discord, they're starting to call him Bomb Cosme because he's already hit more home runs in 13 games than he did in 114 last year for Aberdeen. And he does look a little bit bigger, a little bit stronger. If he's going to add power to his game, he's literally treating double A Bowie at 21 years old, like he treated low A Delmarva in 2022, just hitting the ball wherever he wants it. But with power sprinkled in, forget about it. He's hitting the ball in the air 10% more than he did last year. Ground ball rate is down 7.5%. So hitting the ball harder and in the air more. With his hit tool, this is a guy who's going to be screaming for playing time. And he's perfect, even with all the infield talent that the Orioles have at the major league level. He is the perfect guy that could be he can play shortstop, second base, third base. He could probably play center field, honestly, if you wanted to teach him that, just with his skill that he has, the way his defense is. I love the kid. Fregendary, so glad we got to talk to him on this podcast. I think he's going to break out in a big way this year.
He is off to such a good start. He's hitting the ball harder than he ever has. He hasn't lost. And what impresses me is he has not lost that plate approach. I think it was always sort of assumed that at some point you'd have to have a trade-off where he's going to need to hit for more power and the walk numbers may go, you know, the walk numbers might stay the same, but the strikeout rate is going to go way up. And that has not been the case so far. He's hitting really well, and to touch on the defense, I remember seeing him play shortstop in a playoff game at Aberdeen 2 years ago. And coming away thinking it's not beyond repair, but it's not the way he plays the position is not really smooth. And as he fills out, he might be better off at second and third. Night and day, he really does look a lot better this year. And maybe you're not seeing an everyday shortstop in Ben Cosme right now, but you're seeing someone who at a bare minimum can fill in an emergency. And maybe shortstop is part of what he can do when he gets to the major leagues, because I think he's already got the potential to be someone who rotates between second and third, and now you could add shortstop to that mix.
Yeah, I would trust him at shortstop more than Jordan Westberg right now, and that's not a shot at Jordan Westberg. I just, you know, he's played shortstop most of his career till he got to the majors. I just think Freddie's got that kind of smoothness and upside there.
And with that, now we'll head to our final segment of the show where we shout out a player outside of the top 30 of our top 50 list for something they've done recently, whether it's been a good game, a good week, or maybe there's just something interesting in their stat line that we want to point out. And with that, I'm going to start with Nick, who has a very exciting young outfielder and a pitcher who we have been waiting for a breakout from for a while.
Yeah, my guys aren't outside of our top 50, but they're in the 40s. So I was going to cheat just because I wanted to make sure we touched on them here. Thomas Sosa is the outfielder. I think at one point, like a week ago, he was striking out like almost 60% of the time. I think he led all of minor league baseball in strikeout rate. But that is down. It is down.
More like Jackson Holliday Jr., not Ken Griffey Jr.
Yeah. It's down to like 40-something percent now, and after only like a couple of games. But he's now riding a 7-game on-base streak. He's got doubles in each of his last 5 games, and he posted 2 videos because we couldn't watch Delmarva last week because they were in Down East. But he posted 2 videos on Instagram. One was a 110-mile-per-hour double, and one was a 112-mile-per-hour double. He just turned 19 years old. He is walking at a 14% clip, 129 WRC+. I do think he's incredibly raw, but he is starting to settle in a bit, I think, which is good to see, especially this Delmarva team where the pitching has just been phenomenal. But the batters left, they're settling in. Yeah, we'll say that. My pitcher is Carlos Tavera. His first outing of the year, he's in Bowie. First outing of the year, he recorded 1 out, gave up 3 runs, 5 hits, 1 walk, no strikeouts, had a wild pitch. His second outing, though, came last week. 4 innings, no hits, no runs, no walks, 7 strikeouts, no wild pitches, no hit batters. The emotion that he showed out there on the mound that was coming out of him throughout the outing and at the end of the outing, he's always been someone who showed emotion, but I just felt like this outing, it seemed like he was proving a point to a lot of people, like that my stuff plays and I'm still a pretty good pitcher. I've had a roller coaster relationship with him that's been well documented up to this point. I was pretty much out the door on him, and then he has this kind of outing. We know he can run up into the upper 90s. He's got this lethal changeup. I don't know. Like, you guys tell me, like, I equated my feelings up towards Tavera like being in a toxic high school relationship on one of the dailies. Like, he just apologized to me and now I'm falling in love again. This is like the 5th time in 2 years that I'm taking him back. So, like, from an outsider's point of view, do I stay in this relationship or do I go with Carlos Tavera? Because that outing he had this week for Bowie was one of the better ones I've seen in the entire system this year, to be honest.
It really was, and it was shocking for me because I've dropped him off my personal top 50. I'm not ready to put him right back on from this one outing. I'd like to see how he follows it up over the next few weeks, but definitely caught my attention when I was just about to like put him in the ignore, just breeze right over when I look at the box scores category. Yeah, hats off to him for sure.
Yeah, he's still in my top 50, although he has dropped quite a bit over the last year or so. I really hope that that outing is a sign of things to come, because when he's on, his stuff is as good as any pitcher in the minor leagues, but it just hasn't been on a lot really since the start of last year. So hopefully this is a sign of better things to come. Go over to Bob now, who has a hitter and I guess a pair of relievers he wants to acknowledge in tandem.
Yeah, I'll start with the hitter. Anytime there's someone doing anything positively with the bat in Delmarva, I feel like I got to shout him out. So Angel Tejada is my guy. Talked about him a little bit the past few weeks, or at least once in the past few weeks. Like Nick said, all these things we do kind of blend together a little bit. But 20 years old, just turned 20, end of January this year. Middle infielder. He played 85 games with Delmarva last year and held his own, 96 WRC plus. Off to a decent start again this year, batting 268 with a 660 OPS, 97 WRC plus. But notably, the walk rate is up from 5.5% to 6.8%, and the strikeout rate is cut in half from an already decent 22% to 11.4%. So just wanted to give him a shout out. He also has 9 stolen bases in 9 attempts. So showing off the speed, and yeah, happy to see someone perform well in Delmarva at the plate. And my pitchers, Felix Bautista has taught me that with minor league relievers, you just got to be patient. If someone is just struggling and struggling and struggling, but an organization, at least a smart one like the Orioles are now, sticks with them, keeps putting them out there, keeps giving them chance after chance, there's probably a really good reason for that. And Cade Stroud and Graham Fyrved are that, in my eyes, potentially coming through this year as a breakthrough performer. Cade Stroud is a guy who, if you've been listening to this podcast a while, John Mioli shouted him out years ago saying he's got elite stuff. We've seen the elite stuff, but no command whatsoever. I watched him walk the stadium at a spring training game last year. So far, he just walked the first batter in his last appearance. But so far in 6.2 innings for AA Bowie, he has 8 strikeouts, only 1 walk, hasn't given up a run, only 3 hits allowed. Looks really good. If he's going to have this type of control, command, or even close to it, he's going to be in AAA soon, and he will be an option for the Major League bullpen at some point. And Graham Fyrved, when he was drafted, I was excited because I'm like, oh, he's got an elite fastball. Pure relief prospect. This could be fun. He can move fast. Well, he struggled quite a bit last year, or at least he was up and down, didn't really perform up to what I was expecting, at least. But so far in high Aberdeen this year, 7 innings, he has a 0 ERA as well, 2 saves, only given up 1 hit. He has walked 5, but struck out 6, and it just seems like it's coming together a little bit more for him. Not saying that he's going to shoot up the organization this year, but I could see him ending the year in Bowie and setting himself up for a nice 2025.
Good choices there. I'll go with my guys. I'm going to start with the hitter, and it is the mainstay of this segment, T.T. Bowens. I think that Bowens has been here numerous times over the years, and for good reason. The guy hits everywhere he goes. He belted 2 home runs in Bowie series against Altoona last week and hit safely in 4 of the 5 games in which he appeared. Bowens, you might remember last year, lost a good portion of the season to injury and actually ended up only playing 47 games at AA. He had a stint after the season in the Arizona Fall League, which didn't go all that well, but he has shown no signs of anything from 2023 carrying over because he's off to a strong start at Bowie, hitting .318 right now in the .989 OPS. Already has 3 homers in 12 games. So great start to the season for him. And then my pitcher is Edgar Portes. Portes is not in our top 50, but I suspect it's not going to be a whole lot longer before he is. And if you're a patron, you'll find out here in a couple weeks when we do our monthly update. He had an outing last week against Hudson Valley, 4 innings of relief, struck out 5 batters while walking 2 and giving up a run, which came on a solo home run. That was the only hit he allowed. And that continued what has been a strong start to the season for him. Through 11 innings, entirely of long relief work, he struck out 11 batters while walking 4, giving up just 2 earned runs on 6 hits. You could quibble a little bit with the walks, but remember how far Portes has come in his development and the fact that he is still only 21 years old. 2 years ago at Delmarva, he walked 37 batters in 57 innings. That number dropped last year, and then it continues to drop into the early stages of this season. Nick touched on Substack this earlier this week, go check out that article if you haven't seen it yet, because this guy has really good stuff. And I think now we're starting to see where the command in particular of his secondaries is improving. And he's, to me, becoming one of the more interesting young arms in this system.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of Portez. He's in my personal top 50 going into the preseason. We'll see where he ends up in a couple weeks.
I mean, he spent the offseason at least one session. I don't know how much, but homeboy trained with Pedro Martinez this offseason. So learning from a future Hall of Famer is not a bad way to spend your offseason.
That does it for this episode. We're going to be back later in the week to take listener questions in the mailbag, which will cover Major League and Minor League topics. And don't forget, we have a live show coming up on May 11th at Checker Spot Brewing, located just not too far from Camden Yards. Checker Spot will be a great place for us to have this show. We've been there before. We're happy to be back. The show will begin at 2 p.m., just before the Orioles take on the Diamondbacks. So if you have tickets that day, come by. See us, then head over to the game. If you don't have tickets, come to the show and then hang out at Checker Spot afterwards. They will have the game on, and we'll have a little bit of a viewing party after our show. So looking forward to that. We will have more details on that between now and the 11th, including guests that we're going to have on, as well as anything else that we're planning for that episode. But we look forward to seeing you there. For Bob Phelan and Nick Stevens, this is Zach Spedden. You've been listening to Orioles on the Verge, part of the Believe Podcast Network.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.